Ladies and gentlemen, from the depths of flyover country in the heartland of America, the Kansas City on the other side of the mighty Mo, welcome to Hitting the Bricks with Kathleen, the do-it-yourself genealogy podcast that features your questions and her answers. I am John, your humble hubby host, and on this episode, we'll be talking to Lori Burdack Miller. So let's start Hitting the Bricks.
So Lori, how did we meet? Do you remember?
I believe we met at some genealogy conference, or else you probably when you came out to the archives, one of the two would have to be.
Right. So
I'm thinking more likely it was probably the archives.
It probably was. We were seeing each other at the archives because, John, as you know, when I first started, my concentration was in military records because that's my biggest interest and I still my first love. And So I was always going back and forth once a month to St. Louis. And this is before the new archives. So I really got to meet a lot of the other people who worked there. And Lori does not work for the archives. She works for her own business. So maybe Lori can tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I started my business in August 2006, Redbird Research. And the reason I started it is I've always been into genealogy since I was in high school. I was tracing my dad's Slovak Russian side of the family and taught myself Soundex, taught myself microfilm. And so as the years went on, got married, have two daughters. One's named after Kathleen, of course, but even though she's a little old.
Yeah.
But
your math ain't mathing, but yeah.
That's
awful sweet, right?
But my dad was in the Air Force for 20 years, and so I'm an Air Force brat, born at Patrick Space Force now. So I've always been interested in military and genealogy. So I went to the St. Louis Genealogy Conference that May of 2006 and met Jackie Ostrowski, and they had a little table set up, and Jackie was saying how the archives was going to be opening to the public to do research and that they get so many requests they don't have enough staff to handle it. And she goes, well, you could, you know, come in and do research for people, put your name on the NARA Independent Researchers website. I said, yeah, I'll think about it. This was in April, May of 2006. Thought of it that summer, was talking to my husband, and he was saying, well, you know, the girls are old enough if you want to go back to work, you know. And I said, yeah, you know, I might do this. So I decided that August to go, and that's when the National Archives was located off of Page Avenue, where the famous fire happened in 73. But the building is still standing. So I went there, put my name on the Independent Researchers website, and got my first job within a week and a half. It was a guy in McHenry, Kentucky, where the Everly brothers were from. And they had a person in their cemetery they wanted to get a VA marker for, but they needed documentation. So what I did was pulled the file, and it was a pretty sad file because this gentleman ended up dying of tuberculosis in New York, but there was letters in the file from his wife, who was like 14 or 15 years old, wanting him to come home. She was living with the parents, his parents, and I mean, it was just really a sad file that she never saw him again. So I was invited to their ceremony the following spring when they got the dedication of the tombstone. And they gave me a bullet shell from the 21-gun salute and everything. So it was cool. So when I started my business, I didn't have their websites really weren't around back then. So people would refer me to other people, and that this built my company. I actually didn't have my website till my younger daughter graduated from University of Central Missouri in 2017, and she has a business degree, so her and my husband said, oh, you need a website. But most of my jobs, even though I have a website, referrals are my main business. And I, you know, and I accept that as a compliment because people then like what you're doing for them.
So just
having the flashy website to show anything.
That's your best testimony is the people who come back.
Yeah. So, John, I'm not sure we ever introduce who we're talking to.
Oh, well, maybe we should do that. You would think that somebody would produce this stuff, you know? Well, that's what we're missing. We need a producer on this show. That's one of the biggest issues. All this good.
You can tell Kathy and our kinder sisters here.
And so the mystery may be solved If you send $5.99, we'll tell you who we were talking to. A self-addressed stamped envelope. Please send $5.99, and we will forward to you the name of the person we were talking to. So we're talking to Lori Miller, Kathleen.
Burdick Miller.
Oh, Lori Burdick Miller.
Yes, in case I have relatives out there.
In case you didn't know.
I did know.
Lori Burdick Miller. Yes, I'm sure. You guys hit it, just went straight to it.
And Lori, you are in what area, what region are you in, and which archives do you work for? Or work with, I'm sorry.
Work in. That's all right. I do work, people think I work there too, but that's okay. I go to the National Archives in St. Louis. I live in currently in St. Peter's, Missouri, which is across the Missouri River, and I go there every day.
Which is why, Kathleen, you haven't been to St. Louis for the purpose of records research in how long?
Since the pandemic, I have been using Lori exclusively, and I give her name out for all referrals. So when people call in, since I no longer do the document retrieval for any National Archives except for Kansas City, now Lori gets all of my referral work, and she does all of the work for HB Genealogy.
Lori Burdick Miller, what is your, if people did want to contact you, Lori, how would they do that?
The best way for me is to contact me at redbirdresearch@gmail.com for the St. Louis Cardinals, of course, and Lori@redbirdresearch.com.
Okay.
Those are two options you have.
We'll make sure those are in the show notes.
So Lori was talking about a couple things I want to make sure I mention. Originally, we were all working on this area called Page Street, which was nothing like what we get to work with now if you're going to the National Archives, even as a visitor. But Lori, do they allow visitors now at the National Archives like they used to, where you could set up and anyone can sign up for a table to come and do their own image capturing?
Well, what their process now is, you need to go to NARA.gov and you will look, there's a site about doing research. And what you have to do is in the olden days, you came and made an appointment, did an orientation in the building on a PowerPoint. Right. Now you have to go online and do the orientation and do the quiz, and you will print off the certificate. And after you get that done, then you will contact the archives specialist and set up an appointment to come in and look at the records. And then you will also submit the names of the people you're trying to find files on. Because of that 1973 fire, you might not have a file, or else you might have to go through preservation, and that can take some time. So what I would do is, you know, go to NARA.gov, go to that site, do the quiz, hope you pass it. It's just the rules and regulations of going to any of the National Archives. And once you do that, it's good for any of the National Archives locations, that certificate. And it's good for 1 year. You have to renew it every year.
Lori, have you always been interested in research?
I've always been into history. And so when I graduated high school, I was going to be a travel agent. So I went to Columbia College in Columbia, Missouri for 2 years and got a travel degree. And that's when the computer system was just starting in travel agencies. So I worked for a travel agency that summer and thought, I think I want to continue and get my history degree. Transferred over to the University of Missouri, St. Louis, and got my bachelor's in history. And I worked in collections and exhibits and the library when I was a student. So I've always been into research, looking up stuff. My family always said, oh, Mom, you're always Googling something, try to get the answer for something or looking up. I said, but I got to know these things. I just, you know, so, and like driving down the highway, you know, you see something, got to pull off and go look at that. And so it's always been in me. My dad, with his military background, you know, he kind of like got my interest in looking up stuff more. So I think a lot of that interest came from my dad. If I can learn more, I like to do that. I like to take Zoom classes. I like to take stuff so I can keep on adding to my knowledge and being in different organizations and groups that I can get my additional knowledge added onto.
That sounds very similar. to
that's why
to,
we're sisters.
Yeah,
exactly.
Where she comes from as well. It's always the Googling. It's always putting something into the brain box.
Well, and it's nice to make money. It's nice to add to the income of the family. Mm-hmm. But to me, my reward is helping the people. Yep. You know, I'm, it's like I get personal relationships with people. I mean, I feel like I like to make a relationship with my customers. I don't feel as customers. I said, you become my friends.
See, I told you it was normal. Lori, I have a question. I have another question. Kind of off topic, yes, but just because I know that I still like using National Personnel Records Center, and I know they don't really use that anymore. When did that happen?
Well, people, see, everybody lumps the building as NPRC. It's the National Archives.
Right.
NPRC is under the National Archives, which people don't understand. They go, oh, I need to get my records from NPRC. It's a night. No. A lot of people do not realize there's the 62-year rule, the archival rule. So anybody that gets discharged 62 years from today's date, including reserve time, any extra time, it will determine if the record is on the archival side of the building in the National Archives or in the NPRC side of the building. NPRC side of the building, so today, this year, it would be if anybody discharged in 1962 and back from today's date. So if you have somebody that, say, got out of the service in April 1st, 1962, that record will be on the NPRC side of the building. It won't become archival until April 1st. And then it will be on the Norris side of the building.
And that's because the archival records are public domain. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. And then because even like if I wanted to see a record on the NPRC side of the building, you have to get permission from the next of kin.
Right.
And if there's a death, you have to have proof of death. And those if NPRC records you can also do online. They're e-vet recs. So you can go to the NARA.gov site and you can fill out the form online because people are still waiting for things. So if you're thinking you're going to, like you see veterans, I've seen them, like there's a guard area you need to go through to go into the in the lobby area to get screened, and there'll be veterans that will come up and say, oh, I need my records, and they'll point to the box that you need to fill out this form, and you know you're not going to see your records in person. Back in the olden days when they used to have the NPRC little room, veterans can make an appointment with their family and actually physically see their records at that time. And that ended even before COVID. They cut that out. And now, of course, you can't see them at all.
Kathleen, is there, because of course in my head I'm thinking about the National Archives in Kansas City, is there something analogous to the NPRC there?
No, except everything still has the FOIA or public record 62 years. So that is standard across through an entire federal government. And the reason I'm thinking I never really knew the difference because I required all of that for all my clients. They all had to sign a document, whether or not it was public, that I had permission to pull it. So it was pretty much the same form. And they still had to have proof for me that I'm pulling a form that they should have. But unlike Lori, John, we only have to go a mile and a half down the road. It takes us about 5 minutes.
Oh, you guys can walk.
Yeah, it's not much worse. We'll be able to take the light rail down there, I think, in a few years.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not too far at all.
Everything else we do, our P.O. box and everything else. So.
Well, I know where I'm camping at when I come to KC next time. For the Czechoslovakian conference next year.
Oh, is that here?
Yes, they're going to be in Kansas City next year.
You know what?
Year.
I did know that. There is a librarian here at the Midwest Genealogy Center who's very involved.
Yeah.
Yvette, who actually Yvette
you know,
and
okay, Lori, you're shaking your head. Do you know Yvette?
Yes, because I go every 2 years when they have the Czechoslovakian Genealogy Conference. And to highlight it, this coming July, not that I can really afford it, I'm going to Slovakia.
Oh, wow.
And Helene Sensova, who is arranging it, so last year doing, you know her, last year doing tours, she has like a 96 to 98% rate of matching you with relatives.
Wow.
So I am so excited for that. And then I'm also going to be, if we can arrange it, I did a file for a gentleman of a Slovak that got the Medal of Honor during World War I, and he was killed in 1919. And he's from Bratislava. He was from Bratislava. And of course, you know, people there don't really move a whole lot. Right. They kind of like, and so I made a copy of the file, which is like 200 and something pages. And we're hoping that I can present it to the family while I'm over there.
Oh, neat.
That'll be beautiful.
So that's going to weigh down my suitcase, but what the heck?
Yeah, really, who cares, right? That's worth it.
Who cares? I'll have more room for souvenirs.
I think you're going to love that tour. I knew that the conference was coming because Yvette and two other people went hotel and conference looking last month.
So I'm going to actually start taking Slovak language lessons starting this Wednesday.
That was my next question, actually. That was going to be my next question.
Kolači, pierogies, kablaki. I know the important words of life.
I think I got pierogi out of that. Kathleen, where else do you want to go?
So we did the who is Lori? We did what does she do when she started? You mentioned you go 5 days a week. What does that look like?
Uh-huh. A day in life.
What a day in the life. Well, when you go to the archives, you're allowed to put in 12 requests a day, and you're allowed to see 12 files a day. So it's no problem putting the 12 in a day. They need more staff in the room, which hopefully they'll get approval to hire some more people because they've been shorthanded sometimes with people being sick or children being sick. So one day there's like 3 or 4 staff members out. And when you have that, you know, they need to go through what they do is they get the files pulled. They have to go through the files and redact them from information we're not allowed to see, like social security numbers. It used to be mental illness was redacted from a file. This is a different item, so that takes time for them to go through a file. I mean, I had a file the other day 5 inches thick. So for them to go through that whole file is going to take hours. So you might go in, and you might only have 3 or 4 files. You might not have your 12 files. So I go through, make my copies of my files, and then if there's an opening, they have microfilm readers in the room. You can make appointments either for microfilm or files. But if there is a microfilm reader and they know I've done all my files that are there for the day, I'm allowed to go over to do microfilm. And that's where I can trace people in microfilm morning reports, which is the daily report of a unit. And that is helpful because if the file got destroyed by the fire, if you have a unit, you can find that person and trace them all through the war. And that's what I did for my husband when we years ago when I started my business, because my father-in-law was in World War II, his file was destroyed in the fire. And my brother-in-law was found in his wallet after he died. He had a little copy of his discharge. And Ed never shared. He just said he was in the tank battalion. So with that information, I was able to trace Ed from boot camp at Camp Crowder and then going across the Battle of Bulge, help liberate a concentration camp. Wow. And then come back through Fort Dix. So I copied anything with Ed's name, location changes, and all this. And so I spiral bound it into a book and gave it to my husband for Christmas one year. And it was probably about 2 inches thick. One time I had a guy doing a family reunion, and he wanted his uncle's 2 files that were in the Parachute Infantry Regiment. They were told that they were destroyed. Well, I put in a request, got the 2 files back. There's at least 50 pages in each of them preservation could do.
Wow.
So, and even if it's just one piece of paper, like I'm doing a client now, and nobody knows what unit he was in, they just said, I think he was in officer training. Well, the 2 pieces of paper I got, it was a dental record, and it had his unit on it.
Exactly.
And just like having that unit is like, hallelujah. It wasn't, because he did officer training for like 6 weeks. But now I had this unit, so now I'm tracing him in the morning reports. And it's like, what mainly my day is, I'm there, you know, from 9 a.m. when they open till 4 p.m. when they close.
And as I tell people always, when you pick one document, you can normally come up with 3 questions or 3 pieces of information. Something's there. And one of the things I tell people also is that there's nothing but the pay voucher. They'll say, it was burnt in a fire. We have the last pay voucher. And they don't want to pay it because it's like $20. And my thing is, but you don't know what's on that document.
It shows that they did foreign service. You know, it might be this interesting, like letters in the files. I do a talk on genealogical treasures in military files. And I love doing that talk because people don't realize all the items that are in a file that for genealogists, especially, that we are so excited. I mean, this, I think that's what makes me different than the other researchers in the room. I mean, one time I found a birth certificate. Yeah, well, the lady who first, go back, the daughter of the veteran wrote a letter asking for a copy of her dad's file. And she was told there was no file. So then I'm looking at this file because I was doing it for, I think, a military collector or something. It wasn't for her. And I thought, I got to contact this lady because I got her dad's file. And there's at least, you know, 10 or 12 pages in here. And there's a birth certificate in here, too, which is really important for genealogy. So I saw that she was in Pittsburgh and she has sent the letter like 6 or 7 years previously. So I went, I Googled, you know, trying to find this. She lived north of Pittsburgh and like a pet store or something. So I ended up calling this pet store and I said, is so-and-so working there? And they said, oh, yeah, she's the owner. And I said, could I speak to her? I said, great. So I get her, she gets on the phone. I said, and she goes, hello. And I said, hi, my name's Lori Burdick Miller. I'm a military researcher in St. Louis. And I just want you to know that I have your dad's military file. And she was like totally silent. And she comes back and she goes, really? And I said, yeah. And she goes, I was told there wasn't a file. I said, yeah, there is a file. And I said, and I want you to know there's a birth certificate in it. And she was quiet again. She goes, really? And I said, well, my dad was from Western PA, and your dad was, they lived in the same general area, coal mining area. And she goes, yeah. Oh, my gosh. I said, well, if you give me your address, I'm just going to send it to you. I'm not going to charge you for it or anything. I just want you to have this because I think it's so important. And she goes, well, we always wondered what our real last name was because he kind of Americanized it. So
right.
No problem. So she goes, well, do you have any animals? I said, no, we live in a small villa now. And I said, I have grand dogs and that. She goes, oh, okay. So I send her the stuff. Like 3 weeks later, I get a box full of dog treats in the mail. But to me, it wasn't getting, you know, I wasn't expecting anything from her, but no. You know, these are things you can find in files that people don't know.
Right.
These And that's what I tell genealogists, you know, a military file has so much to it.
Yes.
And when you find things like that, and I mean, it's nice tracing people, the military stuff, but then if you can find the personal touches too in a file. So
yeah,
this was one of my excitement days.
Well, you're giving somebody a last name.
But reconstructing military records is more than just giving the facts. It's like genealogy is more than just giving the facts, the dates, and there's a human behind it. And what Lori does is extraordinary because a lot of document retrievers are just copying it and sending the file back. Or they don't do that extra that you get when you just have a small bit of curiosity when you research.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I had one I was doing. I was tracing because there was not much of a file, so I was tracing morning reports. I saw the guy died in Luxembourg, and I have a customer. One of my early customers lives in Luxembourg, so I said, "Is there any way you can go to the cemetery and take a picture of the tombstone? You know, because it could be on Find a Grave. You know, with it being a national cemetery, it might not be." And he goes, "Can you get a picture of the guy?" And I said, "Well, I'll contact the family." So they sent me, you know, him in uniform. So I sent that over to Daniel. He ends up going to the cemetery, and they have the military markers there aren't raised like our, you know, black printer that's this white on white. So they have a box of sand from the Normandy beaches. So he rubs into the name. He puts the picture at the bottom of the tombstone in a bouquet of flowers and takes a picture for me so I could give it to the family.
Oh, how sweet.
Isn't that precious?
But the family wasn't really overexcited about it. I'm like, this is so cool. but I got a copy of it still. But I just thought, you know, it will, you know, getting closure to the family, you know, this is, you know, that he is still being noticed there, even if he's across the sea, the ocean, wherever, he or she will always be remembered. So, and I think that's the main thing about military research. You're doing it for the remembrance of the veteran and to honor that veteran and honor their family that sacrificed maybe their families, not even by death, but time away from the family to do their service.
Always a huge sacrifice. Let's say thank you to Lori very much for spending time with us and letting us know kind of what a day in the life of a premier researcher looks like.
Well, thank you for the honor of letting me be on your guys' podcast too. I really appreciate it. And like I said, if I can help anybody, and I just like to help people, that's my main goal.
Thanks, Lori.
Well, congratulations. You've made it to the end of another episode. Thanks so much for staying. Thanks to MyHeritage and Legacy Family Tree webinars. Thanks to Chewy Chewbacca Brandt, our part-time arctophile and full-time sucrologist, for his unwavering lack of interest in anything we're doing. The theme song for Hitting the Bricks was written and performed by Tony Fistknuckle and the Parliaments. Watch for their next appearance at the Rathskeller behind the student union at Spelman College. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and of course Buzzsprout. We'd love to hear what you think about the podcast, so stop by our Facebook page at Hitting the Bricks with Kathleen and let us know.